Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, we listen to a little part of the What It Takes podcast from the American Academy of Achievement. And as always, we will close the show with an American story. But first, the downfall of movie producer Harvey Weinstein has been quick and decisive. The increasing spread of the so-called Harvey effect has been quick as well. It started in Hollywood when the first accusations of sexual abuse against Weinstein appeared in media reports. It soon spread to other industries with the help of the hashtag #MeToo. Women and some men publicly reported stories of sexual abuse by powerful people. The accused have included famous movie makers, actors, news media leaders, writers, and American presidents. Most recently, it spread to the British government. Prime Minister Theresa May this week called for changes in the way Parliament deals with reports of sexual harassment or worse. Her statement was in answer to reports that some British lawmakers had sexually harassed their employees or other people.
Weinstein was among the most powerful movie makers in Hollywood. His popular and Academy Award-winning films over the last 30 years include Shakespeare in Love, Pulp Fiction, and Good Will Hunting. He ran Miramax Films and later the Weinstein Company with his brother, Bob Weinstein. On October 5th, the New York Times newspaper wrote about Weinstein's reported history of harassing and assaulting women. Several women, including actress Ashley Judd, told The Times that Weinstein used his industry influence to try to gain sexual favors. The accusations dated back more than 30 years. The women said they believed refusing Weinstein and reporting the actions would have hurt their careers in Hollywood. Judd said in the Times report, "Women have been talking about Harvey amongst ourselves for a long time, and it's simply beyond time to have the conversation publicly." Now, almost 1 month later, more than 50 women have accused Weinstein. 13 say he raped them. Weinstein has been dismissed from the company he created. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has expelled him. The Producers Guild of America, a labor union, did the same. And many actors have sharply criticized him, even those whose careers he helped launch. The New York Police Department, Los Angeles Police Department, and London's Metropolitan Police are all reportedly investigating him.
Public accusations of sexual harassment or assault do not always lead to decisive action. In October of 1991, an American lawyer named Anita Hill testified that her former boss, Clarence Thomas, had sexually harassed her. Hill appeared at a Senate confirmation hearing for Thomas, who was a nominee to serve on the United States Supreme Court. Hill told the senators the incidents had taken place 10 years earlier in her employment at two government agencies. Thomas denied the accusations. He and his supporters said the accusations were politically motivated to block him from the Supreme Court. The Senate debated the nomination and confirmed it. Clarence Thomas remains a Supreme Court justice today. However, the event changed how the country defined and discussed sexual harassment. Hill told the Associated Press on October 14th that she is impressed by the attention being paid to sexual harassment following the Weinstein story.
As the number of Weinstein accusations grew, American actress Alyssa Milano asked her followers on social media for help. She wrote on Twitter on October 15th, "If you've been sexually harassed or assaulted, write Me Too as a reply to this tweet." Her aim was to show that sexual abuse is common. As of October 24th, Twitter had recorded more than 1.7 million Me Too tweets from more than 80 countries. The hashtag brought strength in numbers and helped embolden people to share their stories of assault publicly.
More and more women, and some men, continue to accuse well-known and powerful people. The accusers include Issa Hackett, a producer for the Amazon show Man in the High Castle. She told The Hollywood Reporter Trade magazine that Amazon Studios leader Roy Price repeatedly asked her for sex in July of 2015. The story was published October 12th. A few days later, Price resigned from his job. This week, NBC News dismissed Mark Halperin, a top reporter on American politics, after several women accused him of sexual wrongdoing. In a CNN report last week, one woman said Halperin told her she would never work in media or politics after she refused to kiss him. And earlier this week, American actor Anthony Rapp publicly accused Oscar-winning actor Kevin Spacey of sexual abuse. Rapp said when he was 14 years old, Spacey attempted to have sex with him. The accusation was published on the news site BuzzFeed. Spacey posted a statement on Twitter a few hours later. He said he did not remember the incident and was horrified to hear of it. He said, "If I did behave then, as he describes, I owe him the sincerest apology." Spacey currently stars in the popular Netflix series House of Cards. Netflix announced Tuesday that it has suspended production of the show's final season. It also said it is deeply troubled by the reports. Others have since come forward with sexual harassment accusations against Spacey. Also this week, two women accused actor Dustin Hoffman of sexual harassment. The first, Anna Graham Hunter, described in The Hollywood Reporter several incidents she said took place in 1985 when she was a 17-year-old production assistant. Hoffman said in a statement he is sorry that, in his words, anything I might have done could have put her in an uncomfortable situation. It is not reflective of who I am. Hours later, another woman, writer-producer Wendy Riscationis, said Hoffman harassed her in 1991. She said she had been invited to meet with him and a producer to discuss making a play she had written. She said Hoffman made sexual comments and tried to get her to go to a hotel with him. She said when she refused, the producer told her they had no interest in her play.
Five women recently accused former U.S. President George H.W. Bush of sexual assault. American television actress Heather Lind was the first accuser. Using the hashtag MeToo, Lind wrote on Instagram that Bush touched her inappropriately while she was taking a photo with him. After a second woman came forward with similar accusations, the former president's office released an apology. It also explained that because Bush is in a wheelchair, his arms fall near the lower waist of people with whom he takes pictures. It added that the 95-year-old former president has often patted women's rears in what he intended to be a good-natured manner. Other American presidents, including Bill Clinton and current office holder Donald Trump, have also faced accusations of sexual wrongdoing.
What started in Hollywood may now be playing out in British politics as well. A political website called Guido Fox reported Monday that assistants to Britain's Conservative Party politicians had created a list of 36 lawmakers accused of inappropriate sexual behavior. Conservative Party leader Andrea Leadsom said that Parliament has zero tolerance for inappropriate behavior among lawmakers. She added that changes would be made to how people can report cases of sexual harassment at Parliament. And International Trade Minister Mark Garnier admitted to asking his assistant to buy sex objects for him in 2010. The story from the former employee was reported in the British newspaper The Mail on Sunday. British Prime Minister Theresa May has called for an investigation into whether Garnier broke the ministerial code of conduct. On Wednesday, following a series of accusations of inappropriate sexual behavior, Defense Secretary Michael Fallon sent his letter of resignation to May. May wrote of the growing issue this week, "I do not believe that this situation can be tolerated any longer. It is simply not fair on staff, many of whom are young and in their first job," she wrote. Desmond Tutu was a major figure in South Africa's anti-apartheid movement. He also served as the first Black Anglican Archbishop of Cape Town. Here, he talks a little about the connection between those activities.
We received death threats, yes. But you said, you see, when you are in a struggle, they are going to have to be casualties. And why should you be exempt? But I often said, look here, God, if I'm doing your work, then you jolly well are going to have to look after me. And, well, God did God stuff.
He knew there were people who would see him as a politician masquerading as an archbishop. But in his theology, he explained, all of life belongs to God. You don't have compartments for your economic life and your political life and your religious life. But wasn't he sometimes plagued by doubt?
No, I never doubted. Scared, yeah. Angry many times. I really would get mad with God. I would say, I mean, how in the name of everything that is good can you allow this or that to happen? But I didn't doubt that ultimately good, right, justice would prevail. That I said. There were times, of course, when you had to almost sort of whistle in the dark when you wished you could say to God, God, we know you are running the show, but why don't you make it slightly more obvious that you're doing so?
You can find the whole What It Takes podcast on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. And now it's time for an American story. Here is Shep O'Neill reading Luck by Mark Twain.
I was at a dinner in London, given in honor of one of the most celebrated English military men of his time. I do not want to tell you his real name and titles. I will just call him Lieutenant General Lord Arthur Scoresby. I cannot describe my excitement when I saw this great and famous man. There he sat, the man himself, in person, all covered with medals. I could not take my eyes off him. He seemed to show the true mark of greatness. His fame had no effect on him. The hundreds of eyes watching him, the worship of so many people, did not seem to make any difference to him. Next to me sat a clergyman, who was an old friend of mine. He was not always a clergyman. During the first half of his life, he was a teacher in the military school at Woolwich. There was a strange look in his eye as he leaned toward me and whispered, "Privately, he is a complete fool." He meant, of course, the hero of our dinner. This came as a shock to me. I looked hard at my friend. I could not have been more surprised if he had said the same thing about Napoleon, or Socrates, or Solomon. But I was sure of two things about the clergyman. He always spoke the truth, and his judgment of men was good. Therefore, I wanted to find out more about our hero as soon as I could. Some days later, I got a chance to talk with the clergyman, and he told me more. These are his exact words. "About 40 years ago, I was an instructor in the military academy at Woolwich when young Scoresby was given his first examination. I felt extremely sorry for him. Everybody answered the questions, well, intelligently, while he, why, dear me, he did not know anything, so to speak. He was a nice, pleasant young man. It was painful to see him stand there and give answers that were miracles of stupidity. I knew, of course, that when examined again, he would fail and be thrown out. So, I said to myself, it would be a simple, harmless act to help him as much as I could. I took him aside and found he knew a little about Julius Caesar's history, but he did not know anything else. So I went to work and tested him and worked him like a slave. I made him work over and over again on a few questions about Caesar, which I knew he would be asked. If you will believe me, he came through very well on the day of the examination. He got high praise, too, while others, who knew 1,000 times more than he, were sharply criticized. By some strange, lucky accident, he was asked no questions but those I made him study. Such an accident does not happen more than once in 100 years. Well, all through his studies, I stood by him with the feeling a mother has for a disabled child. And he always saved himself by some miracle. I thought that what in the end would destroy him would be the mathematics examination. I decided to make his end as painless as possible. So I pushed facts into his stupid head for hours. Finally, I let him go to the examination to experience what I was sure would be his dismissal from school. Well, sir, try to imagine the result. I was shocked out of my mind. He took first prize, and he got the highest praise. I felt guilty day and night. What I was doing was not right, but I only wanted to make his dismissal a little less painful for him. I never dreamed it would lead to such strange, laughable results. I thought that sooner or later, one thing was sure to happen. The first real test, once he was through school, would ruin him. Then the Crimean War broke out. I felt that sad for him that there had to be a war. Peace would have given this donkey a chance to escape from ever being found out as being so stupid. Nervously, I waited for the worst to happen. It did. He was appointed an officer, a captain of all things. Who could have dreamed that they would place such a responsibility on such weak shoulders as his? I said to myself that I was responsible to the country for this. I must go with him and protect the nation against him as far as I could. So I joined up with him, and away we went to the field. And there, oh dear, it was terrible. Mistakes, fearful mistakes. Why, he never did anything that was right. Nothing but mistakes. But you see, nobody knew the secret of how stupid he really was. Everybody misunderstood his actions. They saw his stupid mistakes as works of great intelligence. They did, honestly. His smallest mistakes made a man in his right mind cry and shout and scream, too, to himself, of course. And what kept me in a continual fear was the fact that every mistake he made increased his glory and fame. I kept saying to myself that when at last they find out about him, it will be like the sun falling out of the sky. He continued to climb up, over the dead bodies of his superiors. Then, in the hottest moment of one battle, down went our colonel. My heart jumped into my mouth, for Scoresby was the next in line to take his place. "Now we are in for it," I said. The battle grew hotter. The English and their allies were steadily retreating all over the field. Our regiment occupied a position that was extremely important. One mistake now would bring total disaster. And what did Scoresby do this time? He just mistook his left hand for his right hand, that was all. An order came for him to fall back and support our right. Instead, he moved forward and went over the hill to the left. We were over the hill before this insane movement could be discovered and stopped. And what did we find? A large and unsuspected Russian army waiting. And what happened? Were we all killed? That is exactly what would have happened in 99 cases out of 100. But no, those surprised Russians thought that no one regiment by itself would come around there at such a time. It must be the whole British army, they thought. They turned tail. Away they went over the hill and down into the field in wild disorder, and we after them. In no time there was the greatest turnaround you ever saw. The Allies turned defeat into a sweeping and shining victory. The Allied commander looked on, his head spinning with wonder, surprise, and joy. He sent right off for Scoresby and put his arms around him and hugged him on the field in front of all the armies. Scoresby became famous that day as a great military leader, honored throughout the world. That honor will never disappear while history books last. He is just as nice and pleasant as ever. But he still does not know enough to come in out of the rain. He is the stupidest man in the universe. Until now, nobody knew it but Scoresby and myself. He has been followed day by day, year by year, by a strange luck. He has been a shining soldier in all our wars for years. He has filled his whole military life with mistakes. Every one of them brought him another honorary title. Look at his chest, flooded with British and foreign medals. Well, sir, every one of them is the record of some great stupidity or other. They are proof that the best thing that can happen to a man is to be born lucky. I say again, as I did at the dinner, Scoresby's a complete fool.
That's all the time we have for today's show. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.